analyst told me that I was right out of my head, the way he described it. He said I'd be better dead than live. I didn't listen to his jive. I knew all along that he was all wrong, and I knew that he thought I was crazy, but I'm not, don't know. My analyst told me that I was right out of my head. He said I'd need treatment, but I'm not that easily led. He said I was the type that was most inclined, when out of his sight, to be out of my mind. And he thought I was nuts, no more ifs, or ands, or buts. They say as a child I appeared a little bit wild with all my crazy ideas, but I knew what was happening. I knew I was a genius. What's so strange when you know that you're a wizard at three? I knew that this was meant to be. Now I heard little children were supposed to sleep tight. That's why I got into the vodka one night. My parents got frantic, didn't know what to do. But I saw some crazy scenes before I came to now. Do you think I was crazy? I may have been only three, but I was swinging. They all up at angry young men. They all up at Edison and also at Einstein. So why should I feel sorry if they just couldn't understand the idiomatic logic that went on in my head? I had a brain, it was insane. Oh, they used to laugh at me when I refused to ride on all those double-decker buses, all because there was no driver on the top.
What, no driver on the top?
Man, the chick is twisted. Crazy, oop shooby, here flip city.
My analyst told me that I was right out of my head, but I said, dear doctor, I think that it's you instead. Because I have got a thing that's unique and new. To prove it, I'll have the last laugh on you. Cause instead of one head, I got two. And you know, two heads are better than one.
The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Your discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London.
Good night and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight with Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening. This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Oh, so did you watch The Insanity last night? Yeah, you know, I did. I was in and out. I was kind of dozing. It was hard to stay focused on that because it was so all over the place. But I'll tell you, once it ended on CNN, Don Lemon got it right.
I'm just going to speak from the heart here. What we have witnessed was a total eclipse of the facts. Someone who came out on stage and lied directly to the American people and left things out that he said in an attempt to rewrite history, especially when it comes to Charlottesville. He's unhinged. It's embarrassing. And I don't mean for us, the media, because he went after us, but for the country. This is who we elected president of the United States. A man who is so petty that he has to go after people who he deems to be his enemy, like an imaginary friend of a six-year-old. His speech was without thought. It was without reason. It was devoid of facts. It was devoid of wisdom. There was no gravitas. There was no sanity there. He was like a child blaming a sibling on something else. He did it. I didn't do it. He certainly opened up the race wound from Charlottesville. A man clearly wounded by the rational people who are abandoning him in droves, meaning those business people, and the people in Washington now who are questioning his fitness for office and whether he is stable. A man backed into a corner, it seems, by circumstances beyond his control and beyond his understanding.
you know, more and more people are questioning Donald Trump's sanity, and for good reason. The man is totally unhinged. He is really, he's lost his mind. Just think, I don't know if it was 72 minutes or 77 minutes, depending what newspaper you're reading. It's somewhere in there that he rambled on nonstop last night, going back and forth from the teleprompter to off the teleprompter. Let's see. He lied about what he had said in the aftermath of Charlottesville, but actually accused the media of lying about what he said and not covering what he said. He doubled down on his defense of Confederate monuments, even though it was supposed to be a message of unity. That was what all his aides said, that it was going to be a unifying message, that he was going to keep it going from the night before, when he never veered off the teleprompter. He hinted that he'll pardon Joe Arpaio. We'll get to him a little later. He threatened a government shutdown over his ridiculous wall. He verbally attacked Senators McCain and Flake, and even McConnell, though not by name. And the man is unhinged. And once again, he makes it all about himself. You know, say what you will about previous presidents, and you know, most of them were far from perfect. But I think most of them also knew that they were in it to serve the American people. Donald Trump is in this to serve Donald Trump. Once again, today I gravitated towards a column in the Washington Post by Jennifer Rubin. She's quite prolific. She writes a lot. She writes the Right Turn blog for the Washington Post. And I had never read her stuff before because, frankly, I don't spend a lot of time reading conservative bloggers. But I've really become enamored's not the right word, but respectful of a lot of these conservatives who have spoken up and done it early against Donald Trump. And she wrote a piece today, one of a few, that are questions every Republican must answer after Trump's meltdown. And so I want to share with you some of the questions that she's asking. And then I'm going to go to the phones and ask you what you think. If you think these are legitimate questions, is the president morally, intellectually, and temperamentally fit to serve? Can he rationally carry out the duties of his office? Could he be a threat to national security? Do you trust him with possession of the nuclear codes? Will you denounce his encouragement of racist elements? Will the GOP need a different nominee in 2020? And what are you prepared to do about him if you acknowledge he is unfit to lead? All right. You know what? Phones are already ringing, so let's go to the phone now and see who is who's on the line. Hi, who's this? Hello? That's you. All right. It's not you. Somebody's pranking us. Aren't you kids supposed to be in school right now? Anyway, I'll know not to answer that one again. Last night, I played you Don Lemon's opening, right, about that he's really lost his shit, to put it, you know, in terms that I can say here on the radio. James Clapper, the former director of national intelligence under Obama, and someone who has served in every White House in some form since Kennedy, actually said this.
Just so objectionable on so many levels. You know, I've toiled in one capacity or another for every president since and including John F. Kennedy through President Obama. And I don't know when I've listened and watched something like this from a president that I found more disturbing. Having some understanding of the levers of power that are available to a president if he chooses to exercise them. I found this downright scary and disturbing. I think Beccari is right on the money, though, that this is not a surprise. It's interesting to contrast last night's teleprompter Trump performance versus tonight, which is, of course, the real Trump. Just as it was in the unglued impromptu press conference at Trump Tower. So I just find this extremely disturbing.
Are you questioning his fitness?
Yes, I do.
Yes.
I really question his ability to, his fitness to be in this office. And I also am beginning to wonder about his motivation for it. Maybe he is looking for a way out.
Maybe he's looking for a way out. Hold on to that thought. We'll get there too, I hope. All right, from the 813 area code, who's this?
Hi, this is Glenn Nicole from Dillsborough County.
Hey, Glenn. So?
Hey, yeah. Well, I'll just say this much. If this was Bernie Sanders, and I love Bernie Sanders, Bernie all the way, but I think the difference between, say, us, the Bernie supporters, and the Trump supporters, if this was Bernie Sanders, President Sanders, as much as it would have been a dream come true, if he was exhibiting any kind of behavior like this at all, I would be among the first people, and I know I can say us Sanders supporters, unlike the Trump supporters who don't pretend not to see it, we would be saying, get him out, get him out, get him out now. He's not fit to be president. I can say that with the most, absolute certainty. I just wanted to say that, because I know other people are trying to get through. I know you got a guest calling. I just want to say that I know we've been saying, get him out. I appreciate you taking my call, Nicole. Thank you so much.
Thank you for calling. Yeah, I'm taking your calls for a few more minutes. We got a guest in the second half hour. Hi, who's this from the 623 area code?
Hi, it's Barbara in Arizona. How are you?
Oh, good. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm too old to go schlepping downtown, but my friends went.
And
were driving around in their little, carts from Sun City. We had the surprise Indivisible group down there with a giant, the giant duck, and they created a big Trump in a KKK suit, very artistic community here in Arizona.
Uh-huh.
It was like a parade. Now, during the speech, during the day, everything was fine. After the thing was over, I just want to clear the air. They're making it out that suddenly the crowd that was peaceful for hours out in the heat suddenly became violent. And what actually occurred was that after the president and was done in there, and nobody outside really had heard the speeches. They were all
right.
The liberals actually standing outside.
Right.
That suddenly people started to appear with pro-Trump signs, like the printed ones that you see in the rally of
sure, because they were
Trump,
they were coming out Trump. from the venue, from the convention center.
Yeah, but they weren't coming out from the venue. They were supposed to exit on the other side.
Oh.
Suddenly they're amongst the crowd of liberals who were trying to just gather so they could march to the Capitol the opposite direction. No provocation. Nobody from the left was picking up bottles. Suddenly these people come out with water bottles, start attacking the police, and that's when the police, unprovoked, just started tear gassing and those percussion bombs
right
into the crowd. Everybody started running.
Yep. No, I read a few accounts like that this morning that people were saying, we have no idea. I didn't even hear about people with the pro-Trump signs, just that it was a peaceful rally. People were standing outside, had their signs, were hanging out. And all of a sudden, after the speech ended, the cops tried to break up the crowd, and they did it with tear gas and like you said, flash bang grenades or whatever they're called, the percussion bombs.
They had done nothing, and then suddenly, I have a friend, Bill, my friend Wendy from, is, one of the heads of our local Surprise Indivisible, which is like Sun City West. We're talking about retired people.
Uh-huh.
And it was, and they had their group, and then there was a Wear Purple for Wendy group, and there was the Jewish group, and they were all separated. Nobody was gathered together. They were all on different streets downtown. The Trump supporters were supposed to exit the other way. They were giving out tickets because they could not get enough people inside.
That's what I heard. I heard it was pretty sparsely attended.
But at the end of this thing, making it out like suddenly the liberals erupted into violence, and it was just a total and complete lie.
Well, just so you know, from my reading today, I got that. I didn't see anywhere that they said the, you know, the people outside.
You know, I told Wendy, and when I kind of, and what they were doing was trying to clear, I think they were just trying to clear the area so Trump and the limos could get out, and they just weren't asking questions. They were just like, that's it. And because the Trump agitators came out and started, they literally saw people, like suddenly these people are coming out with their printed signs, and they've got water bottles that they had brought, and they started throwing things. And everybody else is just trying to go the other way, to go downtown to march on the Capitol for a few minutes, opposite direction.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
It was unbelievable, and I've got all my different friends who, you know, Facebooked me accounts as they were going on.
Well,
going, we don't know what's going on. We're trying to get out of here.
Yeah.
And some videos of it, you know.
Well, and that's
so
what's happening.
We want to make clear here in Arizona that we were not, we didn't have any, that I know of, anarchist groups in mass. There might have been some down there, but, you know, wearing the black stuff, that just wasn't there. And quite frankly, it was 110 degrees. Downtown yesterday, if anybody was wearing a black hoodie,
they
were in trouble.
They'd be standing out, right? Yeah, I hear you. No, and again, from what I read today, at least in the national press, it was quite apparent that nobody knew why the cops were reacting this way to them, because there was no provocation from the counter protesters, again, who were just there with signs and hanging out. But thank you for letting us know. Because
I had, you know, accounts from, you know, the head of Indivisible here in town and friends, you know, I mean, I live here. Mm-hmm. They're Facebooking me and saying, oh, my God, you can't believe this. You know, and they're giving that little accounts.
I hear you. I hear you.
What happened? And those are eyewitness on the scene and some videos on the scene. And but the head, the Arizona Republican newspaper, the Republic,
right?
You know, said violence erupts.
Right.
You know, they didn't say, you know.
And on CNN, which I was watching a little bit, they showed, you know, the flashbang grenades going off. They showed the smoke bombs and the tear gas, but they didn't attribute it to, you know, the people on the left who were out there. So they were responsible, at least in that instance.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's, but, you know, the right can assume the wrong, you know,
well,
they're
of course.
Look at those liberals.
And that's what they're going to push. That's what they're going to push. They're going to say it's the liberals who were violent and who turned things ugly as soon as the rally let out.
Yeah, and it's just complete and total lie. I mean, come on. You know, there's a video of, you know, one of the guys, and there's a couple of people who came down and they brought their little scooters. You know, they can't walk. It's like, oh, yeah, these people are violent. You know?
Right. The old hippies. All right. Well, thank you for the call.
Yeah, the old hippies in our wheelchairs
right.
and the walkers. You know?
Yeah, the police just wanted to clear the streets.
Yeah, we're fighting back.
Police wanted to clear the streets, and so they did it, you know, the easiest way for them. And the right-wingers, of course, are going to blame our side. Anyway.
And they had some people that they brought in. And they, as my friend Bill said, that like we were leaving and then suddenly we're getting replaced by these people with printed signs that were the signs you see inside the rally.
Mm-hmm.
And they came over to that side of the building and started throwing water bottles. And they're like,
oh,
what are you guys doing? Who are you? You know?
Yeah, that's when it's time to go. As someone just, Randy Lover
leaving.
In the chat room
we
said, if the police tell you to go home, leave. And when things start breaking
leaving.
Up, you get out of there, because that's when things start getting out
wait,
of hand.
Wait, one more thing.
Yes?
The police never told them to leave.
I'm not surprised.
They never asked to disperse. They just suddenly, the thing was over. You know, they didn't know it was over until it was over.
Mm-hmm.
And the police never said to disperse, and they were kind of just going to turn around and just take a walk on the Capitol, you know.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I hear you. But when you start seeing things go awry, that's the time to get out of there. Thank you for the call. I'm going to run along. You know, my stepson lives in Phoenix, and he had, if you might have heard David come in here the other day and say, you know, Max had called him and asked if he should go, like he felt it was his civic duty to go, but is it worth risking whatever could happen? I mean, in the wake of Charlottesville, yeah, you could be risking your life by going to a protest. David doesn't know this, but Max also sent me a message yesterday and asked me what I thought. And first of all, no protest, especially Donald Trump, is worth your life. I believe that. But I do believe it's important to stand up for what's right. But you always got to, you know, you got to be ever diligent and keep awareness of the situation. The minute you see something hinky going on, the minute the cops start coming out in force, or apparently first they set off smoke bombs before they set off the tear gas. That first smoke bomb comes off, you leave. You get out there. You start seeing people show up with those other signs. You get the hell out of there. You made your point. You put in an appearance. You did your duty. You got to be safe above all else, because otherwise you're no good to anyone. So anyway, I want to go back to, before we have to break, go back to this this Jennifer Rubin column again with all those questions I asked. There, she's saying that Senate and House Republicans need to be pressed to give honest, direct answers to these questions that sentient adults are asking themselves. That list of questions I read to you before: is the president morally, intellectually, and temperamentally fit to serve? Can he rationally carry out the duties of his office? As Clapper suggested, and he did in the clip I played for you, could he be a threat to national security? Do you trust him with possession of the nuclear codes? Oh, my God. As horrific as I think Mike Pence would be as president, I don't think Mike Pence would get us into an unnecessary nuclear war. Any nuclear war is unnecessary. I don't think that would happen. Then here's one. Will the GOP need a different nominee in 2020? Hallie Jackson on MSNBC has been asking her Republican guests that, and she asked Susan Collins that yesterday.
The president had an obligation, a moral obligation, to speak with absolute clarity from the very beginning and stick with that, not shift back and forth, to denounce the neo-Nazis, the white supremacists, the anti-Semitism that we heard. And unfortunately, he wavered back and forth. There are no good neo-Nazis.
So what does that say to you about his leadership?
In this case, I think the president failed to meet the standard that we would have expected a president to do in a time like that. There should be no place for hatred, bigotry, and racism in this country, and he should have said that very clearly. He did at times, but then he wavered back and forth.
Given your concerns about that, Senator, at what point, though, given what we've heard from your Republican colleagues, too, does that talk turn into action? At what point, if any, do you not support, for example, his renomination?
Well, I didn't support the president when he was our party's nominee. That was
good
a very
her.
Difficult position for me to take. I'd never taken it before. Instead, I wrote in the name of Paul Ryan. And that was very hard for me to do as a lifelong Republican.
So what happens? He's already running for re-election. What happens next?
Well, it's far too early to tell now. There's a long ways between now and that point.
Do you think he will end up the party's nominee in 2020?
It's too difficult to say.
Okay, so she didn't actually come out and say she wouldn't support him in 2020, but she did say she didn't support him in 2016. Susan Collins did not vote for Donald Trump. She wrote in Paul Ryan, which is pretty heinous in and of itself. But back to this Jennifer Rubin column, the last paragraph is, I think, so amazing to hear, especially from a self-described conservative. She said, if Republicans have not come to terms with the gravity of the situation in which we find ourselves and are not prepared to act, and if Trump is still in office in 2018, the best and maybe only avenue of escape from this presidency would be to give Democrats majority control in both houses. They can then proceed to act within the Constitution to remove a president who never should have been elected and poses a clear and present danger to the country. I'm very grateful for conservatives who will speak the truth and put country above party, which is what they should all be doing. And if you have a member of Congress who represents your area, they you may not feel that they represent you, and they're not willing to say that, then they're putting party above country, and that's a crime in my book. We got to embrace the clarion call of country over party. It was Donald Trump who kept saying America first, America first. How about saying country first? It is our country first and the future of our country that is in great peril right now. And more we're hearing people from James Clapper to Susan Collins to oh, God, what's his name? Bob Corker, saying this man has not shown that he is fit to lead. We need to keep pressing them on the question and get them to do the right thing. So there's that. So I watched a good bit of the thing last night, and I have not watched a lot of Donald Trump's speeches all the way throughout the campaign. When he'd come on, I'd change the channel. I didn't watch him. The sound of his voice makes my skin crawl. It's like fingernails on a blackboard. And I apologize for using his clips in What's News, but when it's news, it's news. But last night, as I'm watching this, and actually all last week, as all this Charlottesville stuff was going on, all I could wonder was, I know the feeling in this country. I saw the latest Quinnipiac poll, and the numbers are not good for him. But then again, he won with shitty poll numbers. So, you know, polling only goes so far. But his numbers do keep falling. I don't know if it's enough. But I wonder what the rest of the world thinks of us. And we have a friend of the show. He's at UK Progressive on Twitter, Dennis Campbell. He's the publisher of UK Progressive Magazine. He's the co-host of the Three Muckrakers podcast. He's a fairly frequent guest on the program. And so I reached out to him and asked if he would care to join in and give us the view from across the pond of what they are saying about us over there. And God, I hope they know it's not all of us. I hope they know that most of us are horrified by what's going on. So we'll take a break. We'll do What's News and come back on the other side with Dennis Campbell next. And we'll find out.
I read the news today. Oh, boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Cable TV ran Donald Trump's Phoenix campaign rally live Tuesday night, all 72 rambling minutes of it. After declaring that all Americans are on the same team, Trump launched into an attack on the media and lied about what he said in response to Charlottesville.
So truly dishonest people in the media and the fake media, they make up stories. They have no sources in many cases. They say a source says there is no such thing, but they don't report the facts. Just like they don't want to report that I spoke out forcefully against hatred, bigotry, and violence, and strongly condemned the neo-Nazis, the white supremacists, and the KKK. I openly called for unity, healing, and love, and they know it because they were all there. So what I did is I thought, I take just a second, I'm really doing this to show you how damn dishonest these people are. So here is my first statement. Here's what I said on Saturday. We're closely following the terrible events unfolding in Charlottesville, Virginia. This is me speaking. We condemn in the strongest possible terms this egregious display of hatred, bigotry, and violence. That's me speaking on Saturday, right after the event.
But there was something missing. Here's what he actually said on Saturday.
We condemn in the strongest possible terms this egregious display of hatred, bigotry, and violence on many sides. On many sides.
On many sides. On many sides. Somehow those words never made it into Trump's diatribe at the Phoenix rally when he claimed to read exactly what he had said last week. Despite persistent rumors that the president would pardon former Sheriff Joe Arpaio, that didn't happen, though he hinted it was coming.
By the way, I'm just curious. Do the people in this room like Sheriff Joe? So, was Sheriff Joe convicted for doing his job? That's what. He should have had a jury, but you know what? I'll make a prediction. I think he's going to be just fine, okay? But But I won't do it tonight because I don't want to cause any controversy. Is that okay? All right. But Sheriff Joe can feel good.
He did bring up a subject that was wildly popular with the Phoenix crowd, the wall, and threatened to shut down the government if the, quote, obstructionist Democrats refused to fund it.
And we are building a wall on the southern border, which is absolutely necessary. Build that wall. Now, the obstructionist Democrats would like us not to do it, but believe me, if we have to close down our government, we're building that wall.
Interestingly, there was no chant about Mexico paying for the wall this time. Trump lashed out at Arizona's two senators, Jeff Flake and John McCain, but didn't mention them by name because he was being presidential.
But you know, they all said, Mr. President, your speech was so good last night. Please, please, Mr. President, don't mention any names. So I won't. I won't. No, I won't vote. One vote away, I will not mention any names. Very presidential, isn't it? Very presidential.
Although he claimed there weren't many people outside of the convention center, thousands of protesters lined the streets. As the rally ended, police used tear gas to clear them out. There were three arrests. Although Hillary Clinton wasn't mentioned during the rally, she does have a book coming out. MSNBC aired a brief excerpt of the audiobook in which Clinton talks about a strange moment during the second presidential debate.
This is not okay, I thought. It was the second presidential debate, and Donald Trump was looming behind me. 2 days before, the world heard him brag about groping women. Now we were on a small stage, and no matter where I walked, he followed me closely, staring at me, making faces. It was incredibly uncomfortable. He was literally breathing down my neck. My skin crawled. It was one of those moments where you wish you could hit pause and ask everyone watching, well, what would you do? Do you stay calm, keep smiling, and carry on as if he weren't repeatedly invading your space? Or do you turn, look him in the eye, and say loudly and clearly, back up, you creep. Get away from me. I know you love to intimidate women, but you can't intimidate me, so back up. I chose option A. I kept my cool, aided by a lifetime of dealing with difficult men trying to throw me off.
The New York Times on Tuesday broke a big story reporting that the relationship between the president and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has disintegrated to the point that they haven't spoken to each other in weeks. And McConnell has privately expressed uncertainty that Trump will be able to salvage his administration. Trump is particularly angry about the failure of the Obamacare repeal and what he believes is McConnell's refusal to protect him from the Russia investigations. I got good news. And that's a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. Check out The Nicole Sandler Show Tuesdays through Fridays from 3 to 4 Eastern at NicoleSandler.com and on the Progressive Voices Network.
The Nicole Sandler Show is 100% listener supported. Have you given yet? Nicole decided not to put her show behind a paywall, knowing that many can't afford the luxury of paying for a podcast. But if you're able to, she needs your financial support to continue doing this. Consider a monthly subscription. Give when you can. Just visit NicoleSandler.com/donate. Remember, she can't do this without you.
All right. He is the editor of UK Progressive Magazine. You can find them at ukprogressive.co.uk and the co-host of the Three Muckrakers podcast. Find him on Twitter at UK Progressive. Our friend Dennis Campbell is with us all the way from across the pond. Hello, Dennis.
Borada, good evening. How are you?
Holding up, you know, hanging in there. That's how we are these days. It's really tough times over here. I think so many of us are on edge and have been for the last 7 months.
It is. It's absolutely insane. I've been just looking at the latest headlines because all day, all of the British press have led with the rambling rally speech that descended into a public meltdown. That's how the Independent described it.
Yeah.
And, you know, now the Guardian brought up what you talked about just before the news, how scary, damn scary, ex-intelligence chief on Trump's access to nuclear codes. He manages to lead all of the headlines here as well, but probably not in a way in which he wants to, unless there's no such thing as bad PR to him.
Well, no, because he calls all the press the fake news. Unless it's complimentary to him, then it's real. He thinks the ridiculous thing is, it really is opposite world. He thinks Fox is great news because they kiss up to him, and it's always very complimentary of him. So Fox is the only news organization that he regularly touts and compliments. Everybody else is fake news to him. By the way, Mitch McConnell, who, you know, is feuding with Trump, actually said this the other day.
My view is that most news is not fake. And but I do try to look at a variety of sources every morning.
You know, I'm no fan of Mitch McConnell, but that's what you do. Not Trump. I don't know if you heard, got the story over there, where every day, twice a day, his staff gives him a folder of complimentary news about him, good stories or pictures in which he looks powerful, or good chyrons that look complimentary towards him on the TV, screen grabs. It's real. The man is sick.
Well, it goes beyond that. I mean, the propaganda office, I'm sorry, the White House press office, mm-hmm. Puts out also at least twice a day an ICYM, in case you missed ICYMI, whatever it is, in case you missed it, where a positive editorial has been written by somebody either on the Fox website or the Fox News Channel or the Wall Street Journal, all publications owned by Rupert Murdoch. And they make a big deal out of reproducing the entire positive, aren't we doing a great job, editorial in the actual body of the press release itself. It's stunning. I'd never seen anything like that before.
How much news coverage did the events in Charlottesville last week get over there?
Well, it did get quite a bit. And I think most of it was shock, as it has been. Pretty much, as you've said, for the entire 7 months. I mean, that, we're blessed with a country that reads. One of the nice things is that you can still, even in this day of the internet, walk into a news agent. That's what they're called. These, you would call it maybe a 7-Eleven or some sort of convenience store. Uh-huh. And there's a center island in the middle of the store where every one of the 9 or 10 major national newspapers are there, and you actually see people standing there reading them, trying to figure out, you know, what the latest story is, and getting the different voices and the different points of view to help sort of find, you know, the truth that would actually be there, knowing that there's bias from the perspective of the editorial board that put the article out there.
Right. Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, you say 9 or 10 national newspapers. We've got one national paper, that's USA Today. Then, you know, there's the New York Times and the Washington Post, which have really stepped up. And we've got, it's sort of newspaper wars going on, because it seems like, well, it seemed like for at least 3 or 4 weeks there, it was like every day at around 4 or 5 o'clock, there'd be another bombshell breaking news story from one or the other. Of course, Donald Trump has to give them his pithy little names, the failing New York Times or the Amazon Washington Post, he calls it, it's owned by Amazon's Jeff Bezos. To discredit
you've got breaking news right now, as a matter of fact.
Oh, no. What?
I follow Tegan Goddard and Political Wire. It's a great site, politicalwire.com.
Yes.
And a lead story just came out, 20 minutes ago now. Carson broke the law at the Trump rally by being introduced as the Secretary of U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, Dr. Ben Carson. That in that moment, because he was at a political rally, the law was broken, because the Hatch Act prohibits cabinet secretaries from leveraging their positions for a political cause. So that means that the head of, say, the Department of Housing and Urban Development can't appear at a campaign rally in a way that implies he's doing so in an official capacity.
And the thing that's insane is that this is a campaign rally for Donald Trump's 2020 campaign. He's fundraising for it, and this the venue, the Phoenix Convention Center, was rented out by the Trump 2020 campaign. So this
you also had the expense, which will be passed back to the campaign, thank goodness, of Air Force One and Air Force Two, because Pence arrived a few hours ahead of him coming in to introduce, so he could then go down to Miami to Doral you know, for his meeting with the Venezuelan refugees. So, I mean, they are burning through such an incredible amount of money. I'm not surprised that the Secret Service has run out of money just trying to keep track of the family. I mean, we got the story here in the Mirror about what's her name? Marla Maples and Tiffany. Tiffany, you know, $100,000 worth of rental cars just to make sure that they're protected. And his large family is going to bankrupt the nation at this point.
Yes. And it's not only that it's a large family, it's that they're jet setters and they go all over the world. I mean, one of the Eric was in Uruguay for some reason. You know, they go all over the world. And then there's Donald Trump going to his different golf properties every weekend or more often than that. And every time he goes out and plays golf, we have to pay for the rental of the golf carts for the Secret Service agents to follow him around on the golf course. So,
well, they finally sat down and said, you know, we're not going to keep a command center inside of Trump Tower because we can't afford the rent.
Right. So they have a trailer or something out on 6th Avenue or 5th Avenue in New York City, which I'm sure the people of New York just love. It's really insane. So obviously Dennis Campbell is with us. You know, I want to bring up you when I asked you to come on the show to talk about, you know, the view from afar, you said that you've been working on a book about Trump. Tell us about the book.
Yeah. I you know, it, well, 4 years ago during the 2016 campaign, I actually wrote a series of books that became the Billionaire Boys Election Freak Show.
I mean the 2012 and campaign?
The 2016 campaign. 2012 campaign, excuse me. Yeah, you're right. I've lost track of dates.
I wish 2016 was 4 years ago.
You know what's happened is that my weeks and months have turned into dog years trying
yes,
to follow Trump.
It feels like it's been 4 years already, not just 7 or 8 months.
Well, I mean, you know, 2012 was a normal campaign.
Yeah, it was.
I mean, you could write about things like issues, and you could write things about the seven dwarfs that were standing at that point in time, and you could actually, you know, put coherent thoughts down into 50, 60 pages and actually have – but the problem was everything that happened this time around happens so quickly and is designed to do nothing but cause misdirection and craziness.
Mm-hmm.
I finally had the opportunity, because he's the 45th president, to sit down and say, okay, in a couple of weeks from the moment, a week or so before the election, right through until that moment, it'll be 45 weeks of President 45. So there's my subtitle.
Oh, wow.
And we're still struggling on the actual title. I mean, I had Moral Bankruptcy, but my publisher wasn't crazy about that one. Right now, we're sitting on Angry Orange Clown because that one is really beginning to but it's a bit pejorative. I'm not sure I can get away with that one, but that's where we stand at the moment. But what I've done is I've broken the last 45 weeks down into the period around the time of the election and the transition, then the first 100 days, then the second 100 days, and where to from here. And, you know, just the sheer volume of stuff that has happened, because I've got all these great sources that I can pull from, including the scripts that we use in every one of the 130 episodes of the Three Muckrakers podcast, I'm able to create a timeline upon which we can then walk the reader through in a way that they're going to be able to see how completely insane this has been. I mean, those 12 days just before the election, when it went from a comfortable Hillary lead and she was campaigning in Phoenix to the utmost and utter disaster that it turned out, because he just kept on hammering home crooked Hillary. Where are the emails? Crooked Hillary. Mm-hmm. They've reopened the FBI investigation. Crooked Hillary. And all of a sudden, you could just see the lead slip away and disappear when they got to Election Day. So it truly was an October surprise. And then what do you do from there? Well, the 100 days of the transition, he did virtually nothing but sit on his thumbs. He's got 590 positions that are still empty, that are key administration positions. He's gutted out and hollowed out so many agencies. So we're going to talk about all of that and the end game and the strategy, and finally focusing in on Russia, which is going to be his Waterloo. It's going to be his complete undoing, because now we've reached finally a point where there is enough information there and enough there that they're going to flip Manafort. They're going to flip this guy, Felix Sater,
yes,
who with his mob ties And they don't care if they go to jail. They're going to make sure he goes with them. And even if he manages to give himself a pardon, okay, which is the big thing everybody worries about, that's not going to shield him from actions in the state of New York. And so if I were him, I would be, you know, checking and wearing orange jumpsuits a lot to see how they look and how they fit.
Dennis Campbell. So, you know, over here, there are still, we've got a lot of, there's so many different alternate theories. There are a lot of people who don't believe there's any there with Russia. My thought is, look, we've got Robert Mueller still doing his investigation, and what we know is such a tiny sliver of information. I mean, they've been at this with however many dozen or two dozen agents working on it, and, yeah, and each doing a different part of it. We have heard about Felix Sater and Manafort. Looks like he's the one who alerted them to that meeting at Trump Tower with Natalia, whatever her last name
Gesundheit.
Was. Yes, thank you. I thought I was going to impress myself and have it flow off my tongue effortlessly, and it didn't. But he allegedly is the one who sang about that. So, you know, I think there's something there, but even people, you know, there are some people on the left who say that's nothing, there's nothing there. I think, you know, there are coincidences, but there's not that many coincidences. And where there's that much smoke, there's bound to be a lot of fire.
There is indeed. And you know, watching the behaviors and you know, I have a tremendous amount of respect for Bob Mueller because he's just keeping his mouth shut.
Yep.
He has absolutely no desire, you know, to become important or leak. He's going to go back to his $3 million a year job when this is all over. And, you know, he just wants to do the right thing in this particular case. He's put a dream team of white collar money laundering crime professionals together. They're doing the legwork, they're doing the homework, and they're keeping their mouths shut because they don't want to harm their case. And you can't ask for anything more. I think when he does speak, that's when Trump and company are going to have to head to the mattresses, because it literally will be game over at that point.
Right. And apparently with this dust-up with McConnell and Trump, the two major points of contention, one is that they didn't repeal and replace Obamacare, but the other part was that he feels that McConnell and Congress should be protecting him from the Russia investigation.
Why didn't you protect me?
Exactly. Man. I mean, he really, I don't know what he thinks the role of president is. He thinks it's dictator. And that's another thing that's so frightening, the way he just assumes, you know, that for instance, Jeff Sessions serves at his pleasure, you know, the way he wanted a loyalty oath from Jim Comey, that he thinks that all the cabinet members serve him and not the American people. He really thinks it's all about him. And I don't know if that's just his ego or his stupidity.
Well, technically speaking, they do serve at the pleasure of the president. But, you know, there is a contract that goes in there, which is that they all swear an oath to the Constitution.
That's right.
So if they are asked to violate the Constitution, we'll go back to, you know, 1974 and Richard Nixon and the Saturday Night Massacre, you know, where they absolutely refused to follow a demand to fire the special prosecutor, Archibald Cox. They basically said, no, we're not going to do that. It's unconstitutional what you are proposing, Mr. President, and, you know, you'll have to fire me. And he did.
Yep.
And that's the one missing factor and missing piece in here, is that none of the members of this cabinet have the moral authority, the moral fortitude, or the moral backbone to stand up to this president, because when you do, he takes to whatever tactic he can, A, to attract attention to himself, and B, to destroy you. So it's a real fine high wire act that all of these cabinet officials are walking. I mean, the Carl Icahn story is one that we've not even really talked about.
Right.
And this man actually manipulated a market using an honorary position. Basically, he went out and went short on all of these oil futures. They had to trade in these oil credits. And because he was then placed in charge of the regulatory group that controls those credits. And of course, he came out with a recommendation saying that those credits should go away. So of course, they went right down through the floor. He made the money on the short side of the sale. And then he also benefited because he owns this massive oil refinery, and the value of that company doubled in price. So he made money on both sides of the deal. And now, suddenly, in the midst of the Charlottesville flack that's being thrown down in front of him, he thought he was just going to be able to quietly resign and go away. Mm-hmm. And not going to happen anymore. Now, all of a sudden, you do have the Office of Government Ethics, within his particular cabinet agency, and others starting to take a look at. So I wonder how Mr. Icahn is going to look in orange as well.
Well, I hope that happens. Again, the head of the government Office of Government Ethics recently left his job because he's one of the few with integrity there. You know, one of the problems is you've got these cabinet members that don't seem to have any integrity. That Tuesday, last Tuesday, standing at Trump Tower when Trump did that off-the-wall press conference and showed, what a bigot he is when he was defending white supremacists and Nazis. Elaine Chao was standing right next to him because that was supposed to be an infrastructure press conference. The first remarks they made were about it was infrastructure week after all. And so there's Elaine Chao, the Secretary of Transportation, standing next to him, an Asian woman who happens to be married to Mitch McConnell. And when he starts taking questions and is espousing all of these white supremacist ideas, she's still standing next to him smiling, and she was asked about it. I wish I had the quote in front of me, but I forget the exact question, but she said, well, I stand by my man, both of them, meaning both Trump and Mitch McConnell. That part I remember.
I guess Tammy Wynette would be proud.
Oh, gee. you got to wonder, when is enough enough? When is it going to be? I watched, Keith Olbermann these days does a video commentary for GQ magazine. Yeah. They're online. And I watched his latest one, and he's talking about the day Donald Trump resigns. And he said, what's going to happen is it's going to be a day like any other day. It's going to start off just like any other day. And then sometime right around 4 or 5 o'clock, all of a sudden the news is going to come down that Donald Trump is resigning. And here's where it gets scary, that then Mike Pence is going to name Marco Rubio as his vice president, and off they go.
Well, he's still got to be confirmed.
That's true, but I guess next to Donald Trump, anybody's going to look good.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, what I find fascinating is the amount of discussion that's going on about this guy Luther Strange in Alabama, and how that fight there is not going to go well for him, and that the Democrats could actually take a Senate seat in Alabama.
I wish, but you know who's going to win the primary there is Judge Roy Moore, who is, I wish I had all the info on him.
He's the birther?
Yes. he's the bigger racist than Jeff Sessions. And he came out ahead in the primary, but not enough to avoid a runoff. But he's going to win the Republican nomination. A Democrat's not going to win that seat. That's the sad part. They're going to get Judge Roy Moore in there, who's a real crazy racist.
And also you've got the craziness going on over Flake in Arizona. It's going to be an interesting campaign if the Democrats actually show up and vote.
And if the Democratic Party shows up. Yeah, the Democratic Party, though, it has its own problems. They have fundraising problems. And for good reason, they have shown themselves inept in governing. The way they ran the last election, they were absent, and they're not doing a great job now, which is scary. They have something, they're down in terms of money in the bank by like half.
Yeah, well, that's don't forget that you still get the DCCC, which has done very well, the Democratic Congressional Committee. They've got a bit of cash on hand, but there's a huge disadvantage because Trump has, and this is why people don't go against him there, is that he's got a number of flaws, but one of the things he knows how to do is he knows how to raise money in small dollar amounts. And, so he's become the Bernie Sanders of the Republican Party, nobody wants to go out against him for fear of losing and turning off that spigot of money. And they also are afraid of, what the country's going to be like and what the party's going to be like when he takes them all down with him. So
right. Well, we also have Steve Bannon, who's now back at Breitbart, who's promised war on the Republican Party, which I guess it could be a good thing. But what he's talking about, he's a strategist, and he knows how to manipulate things. And Breitbart, which started out as this little blog by this Matt Drudge wannabe guy, is now the home of the alt-right, and I hate that term because I think it's a euphemism for white supremacists and Nazis and Klan members. But this is their legitimate home, trying to turn them into a legitimate political force. I do want to ask you, Dennis Campbell, about race attitudes over in the UK. I pulled this clip last week after everything happened with Charlottesville. This is Theresa May condemning what was going on here.
So I see no equivalence between those who propound fascist views and those who oppose them. And I think it is important for all those in positions of responsibility to condemn far-right views wherever we hear them.
Now, she's pretty far-right herself, though, isn't she?
Well, yeah, but she's not as far-right as UKIP, which is Nigel Farage's party. And, and they're in the midst of a leadership election right now, and the rhetoric has started to ramp back up. Right after Brexit, we had a period of about 7 or 8 months, the Brexit vote back in May of 2016, where a number of Muslims, Polish community people, we call them the traveler or the gypsy community, were under attack fairly openly. The number of hate crimes being reported, et cetera, went through the roof. It's now managed to shift itself back a little bit and I don't mean this in terms of ever saying that it's acceptable, but it's at a lower level. Mm. There is a tendency here for us to get along. I mean, I attended a wedding just last Thursday between a wonderful, beautiful Nigerian woman and a Polish gentleman. We have a lot more mixed race marriages, a lot more mixed culture marriages, a lot more tolerance on the whole. The problem is that, when you have a small group of people like in Boston or the small group that was in Charlottesville that get all of the press coverage, then it tends to paint the whole nation with a brush. I don't believe that the South still believes Robert E. Lee and the South will rise again, nor do they care at the end of the day. So I think if everybody would just shut up a bit, calm down, take a deep breath, and go back to their corners, things could actually work out a little bit better there as well. But not when you have the leader of your country standing up and saying the incendiary things he did last night or the week before, just after Charlottesville in New York.
Right, right. And saying there were very fine people marching alongside of those neo-Nazis. No, there weren't. If you're marching, and I don't know anyone who's marching in favor of a Robert E. Lee statue staying up in a park in Charlottesville, Virginia, but say that was your thing. You go marching and you see you're surrounded by, people in white hoods and swastika flags. You get the hell out of there.
Yeah. I hear you.
If you're a fine
person. Just crazy. I mean, in Boston was the same thing. They had this group of people that were just, there was a small group, maybe 50, 60 people,
right,
surrounded by 40,000. And everybody's trying to say, well, it was a free speech and an open discussion march. And, they had signs, some of them, that said Black Lives Matter and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, then why did you just pull permits on 76 of these others? Because you saw how rabid the opposition to what you were trying to do to the country was.
That's a really good question. Really good question. So, Dennis Campbell, how do you think one thing I say, Donald Trump, he lies. He lies incessantly. The one thing he hasn't lied about is this.
The heads would spin.
Your head will spin.
Your head will spin.
Your head will spin.
Our heads are spinning. I'm glad you've kept up with all the news. I really can't wait to see your book. And it's going to be out on September 1st.
Well, between September 1st and September 15th, we'll have a pre-sale. I'll let you know when it gets a little bit closer, and once it's finally finalized and put to bed. But
cool,
yeah, that's what we're aiming for. I mean, I've compiled everything. Now I need to put all the connective tissue together to sort of tell the story.
Because it stresses me out trying to keep up with everything that's going on. It's just there's too much, and my head spins, and it's like I got to stop.
We had to actually shift our podcast from Friday broadcast to Monday broadcast because we literally tape it first thing Friday morning, which was basically the middle of Thursday night for you folks there. And so many things would happen from the time it posted all day Friday, all day Saturday, that we just said, you know what, we've just got to go to Monday for broadcast because we're missing so much of the weekend. And then by the time we get to it the following Friday, it's already a week old.
Right.
That seems to be working much better. But that gives me a chance midweek Wednesday, like I did today, to spend an hour looking at what's happened since the first podcast, start to put a rundown together, and then I'll look at it again on Saturday for an hour, and we'll be ready to roll on Monday. So
the Three Muckrakers podcast, which people can find on iTunes.
It is indeed, yeah.
All right, we are out of time. Dennis Campbell, time flies. I'm sorry?
Always a pleasure.
Oh, well, for me too. Thank you so much for joining us and giving us the perspective. Keep me posted on the book, and I will pass it along to the listeners.
You are so kind. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye. Dennis Campbell, find him at UK Progressive on Twitter. The magazine is ukprogressive.co.uk, and the Three Muckrakers podcast, of course, you can find on Twitter. Tomorrow is Thursday. That means Howie Klein will be here, and I think we're going to have a special guest in the first hour, too, in the first half hour as well. So we'll find out tomorrow, working it out. With that, stay safe, everybody, and stay aware and try to stay calm. That's my new mantra, stay calm. Thank you for listening. I'm Nicole Sandler. We'll see you tomorrow.
the garlic, yes, I was there too. And you know what they said? Well, some of it was true. London calling at the top of the dial. And after all this, won't you give me a smile? London calling. I never felt so much like a